ऐकपाणये ज्ञान मुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इनटू द विभूति योगा चैप्टर डिस्कसिंग द वेरियस विभूतिज ऑफ कृष्णा। सो इन दिस चैप्टर वर्सेस 12 टू वर्सेस 19 ऑनवर्ड्स टिल 42 Krishna talks about his various vibhutis. So let's have a quick overview of this chapter before we go to the last part. So the verses 1 to 7 talk about no one knows Krishna as he is the source of all. But then how can we know Krishna? Krishna can be known only through bhakti by his grace. That is the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. And then Arjuna accepts Krishna's glory, that's from 12 to 18, and desires to hear more, especially about his vibhutis, because Krishna has already said that it's very difficult to know him and devatas can't know him. So then Arjuna feels concerned, how will common people come to know about Krishna? So they cannot very easily know about Krishna's transcendental nature, but at least they can understand Krishna's glory through what is manifest in this world. So how he pervades this world in a glorious way. That's what is the vibhuti concept. So we discuss vibhuti means one among the many, and vibhuti yoga means that the one among the many takes us to the one beyond the many. That is how, that is the last section, how to know Krishna through his vibhutis, that is 19 to 42. So we started this section and we had come till verse 26. So let's start with the next verse. 27th was Uchai Shravasam Ashwanam Vidhimam Amritodbhavam Airavatam Gajendranam Naranam Chinaradhipam. So Uchai Shravasam Ashwanam. So Ashwa is horse. It's like we had Ashwamedha Yagya in the past. So there, that is our horse was sacrificed. So Ashwa is horse. Uchai Shravasam Ashwanam. So among the horses, Krishna says, I am Uchai Shrava. There are many horses, but Uchai Shrava was the horse who appeared during the churning of the milk ocean. And that horse was so extraordinary, so captivating, and actually it was taken by Indra at that time. That's why it's Vidhimam Amritodbhavam. So there are many wonderful horses, and among them the greatest is Uchai Shrava. So Uchai Shrava. And now, when Prabhupada was asked which is the best among all animals, some devotee naturally thought it's cow. Prabhupada said, yes, cow is best in the sense that it's dear to Krishna. But the most attractive, the most beautiful among all animals is the horse. The horse can fight in a war, can ride majestically, can take people around. So Krishna said that the horse is also attractive in its own way. But among all the horses, Uchai Shrava is attractive, and Uchai Shrava is manifesting my vibhuti. Similarly, Airavatam Gajendranam. So, Gaja Indra. Now, the word Gajendra just basically refers to the elephants, the king of the elephants or lordly elephants. So, now Gajendra can be a proper noun or it can be a common noun. We discussed proper earlier about Shiva being the various names of the devatas can be proper nouns or common nouns. So, in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a pastime where it is described about a specific elephant by the name Gajendra, who was caught by a crocodile. So that is the usage of the word Gajendra as a proper noun. It's referring to a specific elephant. But here the word Gajendra is used as a common noun. Common noun means it is used as a generic describer of a certain kind of animals. So Prabhupada translates Gajendra as lordly elephants. So there are elephants which are themselves huge and powerful, and among them there are gigantic elephants who are like the kings of elephants. But among these kings of elephants also, Airavata is special. Airavata is the carrier of Indra. So as I said, Indra is the king of the gods. Similarly, Airavata is the greatest among the kingly elephants. He's very powerful and he strikes terror in the opponents of Indra when Indra is riding on top of Gajendra, of Airavata. So Airavatam Gajendranam Naranam cha naradhipam. So similarly, among human beings, who am I? Krishna says, I'm naradhipam. Naradhipa is, adhipa is the ruler, the king. So is the king, I am the king among the human beings. So what does this represent? That actually the king has enormous power as compared to other people, other human beings. So that extraordinary power, it can be used for good or for bad. That is different point. The point here is that extraordinary power which the king has, that power attracts everyone to the king. And that power is a manifestation of Krishna's power. So it is Krishna who is manifesting his glory through that king. And now we may say that not all kings are godly. That is true. So in fact, we have the pastime of Vena in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Vena actually misused, abused his power and said that, told the Brahmanas to stop worshipping Vishnu and they should worship me alone. Why? Because I am the representative of the Supreme Lord and I am worthy of your worship. So that was his argument, and it was a distorted argument. So the king is worthy of worship, but he is worthy of worship because he represents God. It is not that he substitutes God. He represents God, and as a representative, he is meant to guide people towards God. But the guru, instead of, if the king, instead of representing God, representing God, replaces God, then such a king needs to be defeated and even destroyed. And that's what the Brahmanas did by cursing. So again, the point here is that power which the king has, that is a manifestation of the vibhuti of Krishna. And beyond that, after describing all this, actually the kings, if they are righteous, then they can take the citizens towards God, and that's how they should be. But when they are not, then they will take people on the wrong path. That's why these vibhutis, they can be daivi or they can be asuri. See, all the opulences, whoever has the opulences, those opulences come from Krishna. But not all opulences take us to Krishna. What does that mean? As I was telling about a king may have fierce power, may have tremendous power, but the king may be a tyrant, ruthlessly killing people. Killing people. In European history, they say there are two great population shocks which led to the death of large number of people. So one was the Black Plague, which killed thousands and thousands of people, and the other was the attack of Genghis Khan. You know, he was, wherever he went, he just was so brutal, he left behind a trail of corpses. So there have been many brutal kings like that throughout history. So this kind of abuse of power, that power is a vibhuti. And ultimately, by the past karma of that person was given power by God. But that person chose to abuse the power. And then that will lead to bad karma, and that will lead to harm in this world for other people and harm for them, that person also, either in this or next life. So that abuse of power is undesirable. But wherever there is power, that indicates that there is a vibhuti of God coming. So we should be attracted to those vibhutis which take us towards Krishna. See, vibhuti will naturally attract us. But we should choose which vibhuti we become attracted to. Now, there may be a devotee who sings kirtans very nicely, and there may be a mundane musician who sings sexual songs also very melodiously. Now the musical talent may be there in both. But and that musical talent is a manifestation of Krishna's vibhuti in both. But not all vibhutis are taking a person towards God. Now when a devotee sings kirtan, that reminds us of Krishna, that arouses devotional emotions within us, and that helps us to go closer to Krishna. On the other hand, when a materialistic person sings sexually explicit songs, then that arouses material emotions within us, and the material emotions take us away from Krishna, take us away from the spiritual reality of life. So then we choose which we have to become attracted, because that is our very nature. But we can choose which vibhutis to become attracted to. Now, women be attracted to eloquently delivered speeches and eloquent speakers. Now, these people will have influence. So, there may be non-devotees, there may be politicians, there may be authors who may have the power of speech. That power of speech is opulence of Krishna. But Hitler had such eloquence in his speech. He would spend sometimes hours in front of a mirror observing carefully each expression on his face, each modulation of his tone, and he would do national broadcasts, and he, by his power of speech, perverted the thoughts of an entire nation, practically speaking. So he had the power of speech, he misused it. That power of speech is a vibhuti of Krishna, but whether that takes one towards Krishna or takes one away from Krishna, that depends on that individual soul's free will. And it is our individual free will which will decide which vibhutis we become attracted to. So we try to become attracted to those vibhutis which are manifest either in devotees or which take us towards Krishna. Now, when we do this, we cannot avoid the principle that we have to be attracted. We are conscious beings, and naturally certain things attract us. But when we choose to expose ourselves to certain vibhutis, gradually attraction will develop. If we hear a materialistic person's music repeatedly, well-sung music, in terms of musical abilities, and our attraction will increase to that. But if we hear devotional music sung by a devotee, that our attraction will increase to that also. If you like to read good literature, you can read the books by materialistic people, and if it's well written, that will impress us. If you read the books by devotees, even among devotees, there are different kinds of authors, and some authors they make profound points, and then their writing is eloquent, potent. And we read that is also vibhuti of Krishna, that will attract us towards Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport how the king should use the power to do virtue, to do good, and to take people towards the ultimate good of bhakti. Ayudhanam aham vajram dhenunam asmika madhuk prajanascha asmikandarpah sarpanam asmi vasukihi. So ayudhanam, ayudha is weapons. So among the weapons, I am Vajra. Vajra refers to the thunderbolt, the weapon of Indra. So Indra is the king of the gods, and his elephant is extremely powerful. Similarly, his weapon is also extremely powerful. And what struck terror in the heart of Indra while fighting with Hiranyakashipu was that actually Indra's thunderbolt, which could reduce by one blow a whole mountain into powder, that thunderbolt could not even make a scratch on the body of Hiranyakashipu. Such was the power of the blessing that Hiranyakashipu had got by his austerities to Brahma. So it's a formidable weapon. It can just reduce mountains to powder. So that such what kind of weapon is that? We have nuclear weapons today, but how many nuclear weapons can do something like that? Reduce a whole mountain to just a rubble. Dhenunam asmi kamadhuk. So dhenunam, there are many cows, but among them kamadhuk, there are desire fulfilling cows. That means they give whatever is desired. They can give as much milk as one desires. Now, it's interesting that in Vrindavan, there are Kalpadruma also. There are desire-fulfilling trees, and one can ask them for whatever one wants and get it. But we don't see the Vrajavasis utilizing those desire-fulfilling trees too much. When Radharani, she comes to Pavan Sarovar, she comes and cooks for Krishna. Now, she doesn't say the desire tree, oh, I want to offer Rasgulla to Krishna, or oh, desire tree, just give Rasgulla. She doesn't do like that. Why? Because the joy of love is also in service. So through striving to serve Krishna and cook the best food for her beloved, Radhani relishes the joy of devotional service. So the cows, when they offer milk, they are not just offering milk in Vrindavan, they are offering their love to Krishna. So in the spiritual world, the essential point is the reciprocation of love. Here, Dhenunam asmi kamadhuk. Among the cows which give extraordinary amount of milk, special milk. So they are considered special over. They are the opulence of Krishna. Krishna manifests himself through them. So Prabhupada would say that, you know, what kind of, can human beings make a kind of machine where you put grass from one end and get milk out of the other end? It's a miracle. So that is the kind of machine that a cow is, and it's not a machine, it's a living being. It's sensitive and caring and warm, and that's how is a cow. Dhenunam asmika madhuk, then prajanas cha asmi kandarpaha. Prajanas cha asmi kandarpaha. So Kandarpa is the god of love. Now the god of love attracts people. You know, attracts males to females, females to males. And that's why people have this, you know, Kandarpa is said to have flower arrow. Shoots flower arrows and the arrow pierces the heart. So why is it called a flower arrow? You know, from the front it looks like a flower, but when it goes inside, it burns like an arrow. It cuts and wounds like an arrow. So, flower arrow. Prajanas cha pushpabana. That is the Kamadev. So now Kamadev generally induces lust within us, and we have to be careful. But Krishna is saying that not all Kama is bad. Prajana. Prajana means jana is birth. So Prajana means that Kamadev which leads to the begetting of progeny. This is the explanation of Chakravarti Pad. Prajanas cha asmi kandarpaha. That when the attraction leads to the begetting of new life, that is the kind of lust that I am, Krishna says. So when there is proper dharmic marriage and then there is the begetting of children through that, the children are the gift of God. So that is an act by which God sends new life into the world, and that is special. So prajanas cha asmi kandarpaha. Children are to be seen as gifts of God. You know, sometimes the jnani perspective is there, and the jnani perspective tries to dissect everything in terms of detachment. So in terms of detachment renunciation, in some cases it might be helpful, but otherwise it can lead to a lot of hard-heartedness in most cases. So the jnani perspective, if the parents see that, or people start seeing children as the products of lust, you know, man, woman were attracted and they became lusty, and then this child is born. You know, then how can, if we start seeing children as products of lust, that can lead to, how can the children be offered love and care that they need so that they grow up? So the jnani perspective can make us very hard-hearted, and the jnani perspective is not even complete because that is not seeing the hand of Krishna. So when children are born, actually, the prajana, Krishna says, I am that prajana. So we have that pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Sivananda Sen came to him and told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sannyasi, and Sivananda Sen came and told him that, you know, my wife is expecting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy and he says, yes, may your son be a great Vaishnava. And he gave him a name also over there and blessed him profusely. So prajanas cha asmi kandarpaha. Then sarpanam asmi vasukihi. So there are many sarpas, there are many snakes, but among them the vasuki is a very powerful snake, and this vasuki was used as the rope while the milk ocean was being churned. So he had that power to act as the rope over there, and everybody is pulling. An ordinary rope can break, but at that time he didn't break. In fact, the mode of ignorance acted on him and he went to peaceful sleep while everybody was using his body to pull. So in this way, this is these opulences. Now Krishna goes on further, describes anantaschasminaganam varuno yadasamaham pitrinam aryama chasmi yama sanyamatamaham. So anantaschasminaganam. Now what is the difference? It was sarpanam asmi vasuki. So among snakes I am vasuki, and here there's nagas. Anantas cha asmi naganam. So what is the difference between naga and a sarpa? So the acharya described that a naga is a multi-headed serpent. Normal serpents that we see in today's times, they have one head, but they are ferocious serpents, and they have been observed also on a few occasions even today, where the serpents have many heads. So when they have many heads, like Kaliya had so many heads, Krishna was dancing in all those heads. So multi-headed serpents are called as Nagas. And among them, the most celebrated is Ananta. Anantaschasmina Ganam. So, that power of Ananta is an opulence of Krishna. By seeing that, we can remember Krishna. Varuno Yadasamaham. So, Yadasam. Yadasam is the aquatics. So, among the aquatics, I am Varuna. Varuna is the god controlling water. Actually, he controls water, and that his abode is way inside the water. When the Maharaj, when he went to bathe, described in 28th chapter of the 10th canto, how when he went to bathe, the residents of the servants of Varuna took him, arrested him and took him to the abode of Varuna, which is deep inside the water. So he is the, there are many bodies, there are many aquatics, but he is controlling all of them, as he is considered to be the most powerful. Varuno Yadasamama, his power represents Krishna. So then it is said, Pitrinam Aryama Chasmi. So Pitrinam, among the ancestors, I am Aryama. Aryama is the chief of the ancestors again. So Pitra Loka, Pitranyanti Pitrivataha. It has been talked about in 9.25 earlier also, that those who worship the Pitras go to the Pitras. So actually, generally speaking, in the Vedic culture it is described. Now you wonder, what is this concept of Pitraloka? Is it that all ancestors go to Pitraloka? Everybody's ancestors, whatever be their karma, they go to Pitraloka? Not like that. Vedic culture, the idea was, people generally live a life of Punya. So those who live a life of average Punya, they go to Pitraloka. Those who live a life of above average Punya, they will go to Swargaloka. So normal destination for the ancestors is expected to be Pitraloka. But if they do a very high Punya, they can go to Swargaloka. If they do Papa, then they can go to Narak also. That will vary. But in general, the Vedic culture had a progressive way of living. The progression was gradual, but that gradual progression led to some level of elevation. So that abode where the ancestors normally expected to go, if they do average level of Punya, that is called as Pitraloka. And the predominating deity of the in charge of the Pitraloka is Aryama. So his power represents the power of Krishna. Yama Sanyamatamaham. And among the dispensers of law, Sanyamatam, those who bring Sanyama on others. Who am I? Yamaha. Yama is Yamaraj. So actually, you know, people want to break free and defy rules in this world. And they may do that first to some extent. No matter how much they defy rules, and if they are powerful, they may break the rules and get away with it also. They can. But ultimately, they are all regulated by Yamaraj. They cannot escape the power of Yamaraj. There is the cosmic system of justice, and they cannot escape that. So those who refuse to be regulated in this world by rules of God or rules of the state, they are ultimately regulated by the rules of Yamaraj. They have to endure the punishments that will come as a result of their karmic misdeeds. Then Prahladas Chasmi Daityanam Kalah Kalayatamaham Mruganam Chamrugendroham Vainateyascha Pakshinam. So Prahladas Chasmi Daityanam Daityanam. So the Daityas, you know, Adityas and Daityas. So Kashyap Muni had two wives. Among several wives, there are two major wives, Aditi and Diti. So the sons of Diti are called as Daityas, sons of Aditi are called as Adityas. So the gods, the Adityas are sometimes called the gods, the Daityas are called the demons. So actually they are related, they are cousins in a sense, but they are not exactly cousins, they are even stepbrothers. But their natures are very opposite. And because of that, there is a conflict. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Deva Asuras Tadviparyaya. And those who are devoted to Vishnu, they are the Bhaktas, and opposite to them are the Asuras. Opposed to them are the Asuras. Now, Prahladas Chasmi Daityanam. So normally Daityas are very inimical to Vishnu, but among the Daityas, a very special person is Prahlad. Prahlad may not seem to have much physical power, but he had enormous spiritual power. Such spiritual power that the person with the greatest physical power in the whole universe could do nothing for him, nothing against him. lot of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu have terrorized even the greatest of the devatas. But Hiranyakashipu could not do anything to Prahlad. So his extraordinary character than the Daitya dynasty, and that's why his extraordinariness is a manifestation of Krishna's opulence. Kala kalayatamaham. So among subduers, I am dying. Kalaya, subduers. So among subduers, I am dying. So what does it mean actually? Kala kalayatamaham. So again, in this world, people may refuse to be subdued by anyone, but then time subdues everyone. You know, time makes shiny faces shriveled. Time makes strong persons weak. Time makes healthy persons sickly. Time makes active people passive. Time makes the living dead. The time changes everything in this world, and nobody can resist time. So kala kalayatamaham, ultimately time subdues everyone. There will be the greatest of conquerors in this world, but time will conquer the greatest conquerors also in this world. And then mruganam cha mrugendroham. So mruganam, mruga means animals. Mrugendra is a lion. So actually the lion has a majesty and a ferocity that is extraordinary. Mruganam cha mrugendroham. So Krishna says, I am among the animals, I am the lion. So actually one time devotees had gone to a zoo. Prabhupada had also gone there. So some people were just poking sticks and making fun of a lion that was caged. And Prabhupada said, don't do that. Prabhupada reminded devotees of this verse, and he says, actually that lion is meant to be the king, and lion deserves respect. Now he's been put in an unnatural situation. It is miserable for this lion. So we should not heap insult to injury over there. So these are opulences of Krishna, and devotee tries to see the opulences everywhere. And then vainateyascha pakshinam. So pakshi is birds. So among them vainati, actually Garuda's mother is named as Viniti, is known as Viniti, and therefore the son of Viniti is vainateya. So vainateyascha pakshinam, among birds I am Garuda. Now Garuda is so powerful. Actually there is a long story given in the Mahabharata how the mother of the snakes and the mother of Garuda, they were friends, they were acquaintances, and somehow the mother of the snakes cheated Garuda's mother Viniti, and Viniti and her son became slaves of Garuda. So at that time Garuda asked, you know, why do we have to serve them? How can we? Because he said that's what the condition was. I lost the bet. Actually, the mother of the snakes had cheated so that Viniti would be enslaved. And Garuda went and asked, what will you take for freeing my mother and me? He said, we want the nectar from Swarga. So Garuda said, okay, I'll go. Now Garuda had a huge power. He had flying straight into the sky, and he went to the place where the devatas had stored the nectar. The other devatas came and their guards over there. They said, stop. Garuda just blew his wings and all of them flew away. And then they went to Indra. And Indra said, what a huge bird this is. Indra said, stop, otherwise I'll kill you. Garuda did not pay attention. And Indra threw a thunderbolt. And Garuda said, actually a thunderbolt can't do anything to me. But because you are the king of the gods, therefore out of respect for you, I will let the thunderbolt cut one part of one feather of my body. And then he let the feather cut. And they were shocked. Indra was very diplomatic. He said, oh, you're so powerful, you know, I'm impressed, let us be friends. The idea is, if you can't suppress somebody, can't defeat somebody, befriend that person. So then Indra said, why do you want this nectar? He said, this is not meant for the demons. He said, no, the Nagas want this. Indra said that, you have been told only to deliver it to them, isn't it? He said, yes. So then Indra delivered. So he says, okay, you just go and give it to them and leave at that time. So he said, okay. So he went and left it for the Nagas, and as they were taking it, Garuda just blew his wings, and when he blew the wings, such a wind came that the Nagas became blinded for temporarily. The snakes became blinded temporarily, and that time Indra came and took the pot of nectar and went away again. So that way, Garuda did was, he liberated his mother from slavery. So he was such a powerful bird that even Indra's thunderbolt couldn't cut him. Vainateyascha pakshinam. And there are many stories of Garuda also, how he is competently serving Lord Vishnu in his various pastimes. Then Pavanaha Pavatam Asmi Ramaha Shastrabhritamaham Yashanam Makaras Chasmi Srotasam Asmi Janavi Pavana Pavatam Asmi. Pavanaha, Pavanaha means the wind. So there are many purifying objects, among them wind is also a purifier, and that purifying potency of the wind represents Krishna. Ramaha Shastrabhatamaham. So among Shastrabhata, those who carry weapons, there are many, but among them the most formidable and fearsome carriers of the weapons were the two Ramas. It can refer to Parashuram, it can refer to Lord Ramachandra also. Ramaha Shastrabhatamaham. Jashanam Makaras Jasmi Jashanam. Jashanam is among the fish, I am the shark. And the shark is so swift and so fearsome. There are movies made about shark called Jaws and things. They can swiftly catch and consume a person. So that ferocity, that power, that speed, that is representative of Krishna's opulence. Srotasam Asmi Janavi. So among the flowing rivers, I am the Ganga. Ganga is sacred. Ganga comes from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Ganga is held by Lord Shiva on his head, is received by Lord Shiva on his head. So in that way, Ganga is so special among all rivers. So it is considered to be a manifestation of Krishna. So when we see the Ganga, we can remember Krishna in various ways. Charan Sindhu Dekhiya Ganga Sukh Sasi Ma Paaye. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his Shuddha Bhakata Charan Renu Bhajana Anukula. He says that, he's singing this song about what all meditations and attitudes are favorable for, are healthy for a devotee to have. And he says the devotee should take the various spiritual objects as stimuli for contemplation on Krishna. And therefore he describes that actually contemplating on the Ganga, when you see the Ganga, this is the Charana Sindhu, it's like the Charanamrita of Lord Vishnu. When Bali Maharaj gave the three worlds, but still that was not enough for the three steps. So then Vamandev let his third step expand from the bottom of the universe to the top. So at that time, from the universal covering, they broke the upper part of the stove, broke the universal covering, then what came out? That came as Ganga. So that's why Charanamrita. So devotee can remember it in different ways. The Lord can use the sight of Ganga, the thought of Ganga, to stimulate our devotional memory in different ways, remembering that this is the opulence of Krishna. So, Sarganam Adirantascha Madhyam Chaivaham Arjuna Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam Vadaha Pravadatamaham. Sarganam. Sarga is creation. Adirantascha Madhyam Chaiva. So, beginning, middle, and end. Of all creations, at the beginning, middle, and end. So now, earlier in the 20th verse, Krishna has talked about Ahamadishcha Madhyamcha Bhutanamanta Evacha. There he was talking about his pervasion in terms of all phases of time for the living beings. Bhutanam refers to living beings. So beginning, middle, and end. Here he is talking about non-living, insentient things. Sarganam Adhirantascha. Beginning, middle, and end. All this I am, he says. Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam Vidyanam. So there are various kinds of knowledge, but the most potent among those knowledge is Adhyatma Vidya. Material Vidya can help us in the material world to some extent, but it cannot get us out of the material world. Adhyatma Vidya can get us out of the material world, and that is the greatest blessing that we can get from the material world. And not only can Adhyatma Vidya get us out of the material world, but the spiritual knowledge can grant us the best possible fulfillment even in the material world. So Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam, and then Vadaha Pravadatamaham. So Pravadatam means when people are having debates and there are arguments. So there are different kinds of arguments. Sometimes some arguers when we make a logical argument, they will attack ad hominem. Ad hominem means, instead of attacking the argument, they attack the person making that argument, and they try to shift the focus of the debate from the content of the argument to the character of the arguer. So that is considered to be a malicious argument normally, which ad hominem attacks. And then beyond that, there is another kind of argument which Prabhupada is vadaha. Vadaha here is vitanda. Vitanda means that actually I don't care whether I am right or not. I am going to prove that you are wrong. So whatever you say, wrong. So it's called vitanda. Vitanda. Vitanda means just, it's actually not constructive argument, it's destructive argument. Destructive argument means the focus is just on proving the other person wrong, not even on proving oneself right, and not even on trying to understand or discover or establish what is right. So, you know, to prove myself right may not actually always be right also in a debate. It may be a process of discovery where we understand what is right through mutual discussion. But vitanda is a destructive argument where the only goal is to prove the other person wrong. Especially if there is animosity between two people, then the whole purpose of the interaction often is to put the other person down. So then that time vitanda is used. So, but vadaha is the argument where it's conclusive. Normally there is argument and then is counter argument, and then is counter counter argument, and then is counter counter argument, and there is counter 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 argument, and like that this counter can stop counting, but the arguments will not stop, it will just go on. That's why at logical level there is no end. But in some cases, in some debates, some people may be so powerful logically. Logic is after all a weapon. Now some people may be more skilled at using the weapon, some people may be less skilled at using the weapon. See, logic itself doesn't reveal the truth always. You know, if atheist is confronted in a debate with a theist, but the atheist is logically more skilled and a theist is not skilled logically, then the atheist may defeat the theist also. That can happen, not because theism is intellectually weaker or atheism is intellectually superior, but it's just that the representatives who are combating over there may not be equally matched. So therefore, here we are not talking about the strengths of various schools of thought, but here we are talking about the point of argument. So there are different kinds of arguments, and sometimes the arguer gives an argument for which there is just no comeback. There is no comeback. So when there is no comeback, then that is like a decisive, conclusive, knockout argument. So that knockout argument is vadaha. Vadaha pravadatam aham. Then aksharanam akarosmi dvandva samasikasya cha ahameva akshaya kalo dhataham vishvato mukha. So aksharanam akarosmi. So there are many letters. So now this is giving us a vision of the absolute truth that is actually pervasive. When we look at letters, normally we may not think about Krishna. We think about language, and in itself may seem to be technical. Jiva Goswami, to help us get a devotional vision of language, you know, he rewrote the whole grammar based on rules using the names of Krishna and Vishnu. So Harinamamrita Vyakarana. So that is to help us see the spiritual even within the grammatical. But here the Bhagavad Gita is telling the same thing to us in principle, and is saying that actually even the letters, we look at the letters and we say that okay, these letters, among them some letters are more commonly used, more important. So all the alphabet begins with A. In Sanskrit also it's A. So Akara. So among the aksharas, among the various letters, A is the beginning. And it is said that actually in all sounds in Sanskrit, the A sound is present. The Aitareya Aranyaka says that actually the A sound is universal in all syllables in Sanskrit, all sounds in Sanskrit. So that sound which is the beginning, and that sound which is also, according to some analysis, present in all other sounds, that sound represents Krishna. Then dvandva samasikasya cha. So samasika is compound words. Now for example, we have devotee children. So the children, there is devotee. This is a compound word. There are two parts you have brought together in it. So when there are compound words, or we have a devotee scientist, that's also a compound word. So now sometimes in the compound words, one word is heavier than the other, is more important than the other. So devotee children. So now it will depend on the context. What is it want to emphasize? Is it that children you want to emphasize, or is it devotee you want to emphasize? So in some compound words, the first word is more important. In some compound words, the second word is more important. But Krishna is saying that the most special compound words are those in which both are equally important, both have equal weight. And Prabhupada gives the example of Rama Krishna. It's a compound word. Rama and Krishna both are there. So such compound words in which both the components of the compound are equally important, that is called as Dvandva. That is called a Dvandva, and that is a representation of Krishna. So actually it is said in a language there should not be one, in a sentence there should not be one word more than what is necessary. In a paragraph there should not be one sentence more than what is necessary. In an essay there should not be one paragraph more than what is necessary. That is, eloquence is truth spoken concisely, as Krishna Askara Goswami said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So here the point which is made is that when we use words, if we can use words in such a way that every word has potency, and the compound word, both words have equal potency, then that is a sign of the expertise in the use of language. And such a dvandva is an opulence of Krishna. Aham eva akshaya kalo. So here Krishna is repeating, but here about the power of time. Earlier he talked about yama sanyamata maham, among subduers I am time. But here he talks about aham eva akshaya. Akshaya is imperishable, so eternal. I am inexhaustible time. So actually in this world, time has a peculiar characteristics. Time exhausts everyone but never gets exhausted. Time exhausts everyone as time passes. As we said, the young become old, the energetic become energyless. So time exhausts everyone, but time never gets exhausted. Time keeps running, moving forward at its own pace. So such a extraordinary time, it just keeps moving inexorably. That is a manifestation of Krishna. And Dhataham Vishvato Mukha. So Vishvato Mukha refers to Brahmaji. So Dhata. So among the various creators, Brahmaji is the manifestation of Krishna's opulence. Sometimes there may be some person who may say, I am a builder, and I have built 500 buildings. Somebody says, I have built 1,000 buildings. Actually, most people cannot build too many buildings. If a king has built many temples or many palaces, people, that for king's name may go in history books. But who can say that I have built the whole universe? Only Brahmaji can say that. And how does he get that power? He gets it from Krishna. So that extraordinary capacity and feat of Brahmaji to build the whole universe, that is the opulence of Krishna. And then, in this way, Krishna is describing various opulences. So, Mrityu Sarvaharashchaham Udbhavascha Bhavishyatam Kirti Shreer Vakchanarinam Smutirmedha Dhritikshama. So, Mrityu Sarvaharashchaham. So, Sarvahara. You know, in this world, there are thieves which steal away. So, some thieves may steal their money. Some other thieves may come, okay, not just your money, I want your credit card also. I'll not only take your money, I'll take whatever money in the bank balance also. Some people may come and not only steal the money, they may steal the money and steal the clothes of the person also. Person is left with literally nothing. But, you know, where is a thief like time, like death? You know, death not only takes away our possessions, death not only takes away our identification card, our ID card, it just takes away our identification itself. You know, you just forget who we are. Everything, I may think I'm an engineer, I'm a doctor, I am this and that. Everything is taken away. The only thing that is left is the conceptions that we have, developed in terms of desires and karma. That's the only thing that stays with us. know, the material identification that we have got, that also goes, everything is taken away, sarvaharashcha, nothing is left. So that is a thorough, you know, sometimes it is said, I do a thorough job. So death does the most thorough job. You know, it takes away, and it takes away everything, leaving nothing behind. So that all devouring sort of capacity, that is the representation of Krishna's opulence. Udbhavascha bhavichyatam, but Krishna's opulence is not one side, he's not just the destroyer, he's also the creator. I am the generator, the principle underlying the generation of future manifestations. So, actually, as we discussed earlier, the process of the arrival of new life, not just in human form, but in various forms, it's an extraordinary process, how the progeny is born in any species. And it is ultimately God's hand. In the Bhagavatam, the 6th canto, in Chitraketu pastime, it is explained that sometimes the husband is potent and the wife is fertile. And still when the two unite, children are not born. Why is that? Now, biologically, or some doctors say everything is all right, but still children are not born. So when such a thing happens, actually the Bhagavatam uses this Chodutam, use the example to make the point that actually we are not the ultimate doers. So life doesn't come just by the union of the male and female. Actually there has to be the sanction of God above and above that. And beyond that, Kirti Shri Vakcha Narinam Smritir Medha Dhritikshama. So here is given a list of qualities. Kirti is fame, then beauty, Vak is fine speech, Narinam of the woman, Smritir Medha Dhritikshama. So memory, intelligence, firmness and patience, Dhuti and Kshama. Now what does it mean actually? See, there are various explanations which are given by different acharyas. So these qualities are considered feminine. So now Prabhupada, the way Prabhupada puts it, among women I am fame, fortune, fine speech. So what does it mean? That when women have these qualities, that is a manifestation of Krishna, that is fine. That is true at one level. Another explanation is that these themselves are feminine qualities. That means there are certain nouns which are in Sanskrit masculine, certain nouns which are feminine. So Narinam refers to feminine nouns, and among feminine nouns these are special. So again, the point is, let's not go into the technicalities here, the point is that we can see whatever is an opulence wherever, we can see that as the opulence of Krishna and attract ourselves to Krishna. So Vak also is often referred to, use the Sanskrit language. It is said the Sanskrit language is capable of expressing every thought that the human mind can come up with. Speciality of that language. And Vaka is often used to refer to Sanskrit. Brihat Sam Tatha Samnam Gayatri Chandasamaham Masanam Margashir Shoham Rutunam Kusumakaraha. So Brihat Sam. So in the Sam Veda, there is a special song called the Brihat Sam, which is very melodious and which is used to glorify, which is used for praising and eulogizing and glorifying. And Gayatri Chanda Samaham. So the Vedas have various meters, and among them one of the meters is Gayatri, and that is a special meter. So that meter represents Krishna. This sometimes this is said to refer to the Gayatri mantra that we chant also. That is also one understanding. So, but here the point is, among the chandas I am Gayatri. So there are various chandas, and Gayatri is one of the chandas. There is also a mantra by the name Gayatri which the Brahman initiated devotees chant. So the word can have many meanings. Then Masanam Margashishoham. So actually speaking, among the months I am Margashisha. Why Margashisha? Because that is the time when the nature reveals its bounty. Now there are kharif crops, there are rabi crops, like that. There are different crops which grow in different seasons. So it is said that from one particular point of view, Ayurvedic understanding, that the Margashirsha, the month when it's roughly November, December, that is the time when the crops grow bountifully in a proper climate, and that month where nature gives out her bounty lavishly, that is considered to be a manifestation of Krishna. So first Krishna talks in terms of seasons, and then Krishna talks in terms of months. Sorry, here Krishna talks in terms of months, Masana, Marga, Shini, Shoham, and then he talks in terms of seasons, Rutu, Naam. Rutu is season. Kusuma, Akaraha. Akaraha means maker. So Ratna Akara. So pearls are formed in the ocean, so ocean is called Ratna Akara. So like the Kusuma Akara refers to that which forms the Kusuma, flower, that is flower bearing spring. So when spring comes, you know, nature becomes so beautiful with varieties of flowers coming up, and it appears as if, you know, a painter has decorated all of nature with a magnificent hand. So that luxuriant beauty of nature, which is manifested in spring, is considered to be an opulence of Krishna. Dyutam chalayatam asmi tejas tejasvinamaham jayosmi vyavasayosmi sattvam sattvatamaham. So dyutam chalayatam asmi. So chalayatam means cheats. So among all forms of cheating, I am gambling. So normally, why gambling here? See, generally speaking, when we are cheated, normally no one wants to be cheated. And we will try to fight off, we will try to resist if anybody tries to cheat us. That's how we do it normally. But if somebody fools a person so thoroughly that actually that person willingly participates in an endeavor that ends up cheating him, and that is considered to be is a manifestation of extraordinary cunningness, where the person is so deluded that the person voluntarily chooses to become to get cheated. So in gambling, everybody knows that actually what one is more likely to lose than to gain. If the gamblers were meant to gain, then actually the gambling houses would become bankrupt. The gambling houses run, they have their expenses and they have their employees and they earn profits. How do they do that? Because the whole gambling runs are run in such a way that actually people gamble, the people who are gambling are meant to lose more than they are meant to gain. And that's how it works. So, dhutam chalayatam asmi, yet people participate in gambling. So, Krishna says, now the point is not that cheating is good or gambling is good. Sometimes people ask, you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj, you know, he also gambled, so why can't we gamble? So actually the lesson of the Mahabharata is exactly the opposite. The lesson of the Mahabharata is that even if a king like Yudhishthir Maharaj, who is so virtuous, if he gambles, even he gets in trouble. So we are not at all virtuous like Yudhishthir. So if we gamble, we will get into far greater trouble. The Mahabharata sometimes uses exalted characters to demonstrate extreme lessons in unforgettable ways to us. So here the point is not that cheating is good or cheating is divine. The point is cheating is just accepted as a fact of nature, and within the various kinds of cheating also there are some cheatings which are extraordinary, and those cheatings, the opulence, the intelligence that is manifested over there, that can also be seen as a manifestation of God. Tejas Tejas Vinamaham. I am the splendor of the splendid. So some people have charisma, some people have, you know, a carriage, a personality, the splendor they have. So that splendor is a representation of Krishna. Charisma is often a extraordinary thing. Some leaders just have charisma. When they appear, people are attracted to those leaders. Now, what makes people attracted to them? When sociologists and historians try to deconstruct charisma, it's very difficult to deconstruct. Now, when spiritual disciples are attracted to spiritual master, other people may wonder, you know, what is this? Why are they so madly attracted to that person? Just can't understand. Of course, the charisma of a material leader and a spiritual leader are of a different nature. But still, the point is that splendor of the splendid, that is a manifestation of Krishna. Jayosmi vyavasayosmi. So, when there is jaya, when there is victory, then that thrill of victory. Many players play sports because, you know, the thrill of victory that they get, it's so exhilarating that they want it again and again and again and again. and they live for it. So what is that feeling? Now at the material level, it's that feeling is fleeting. It comes and it goes. But when it is there, it is so exhilarating that people just want it. So when we see that feeling of exhilaration, when if we experience it or we see others experiencing it, a devotee sees that actually this is an experience of Krishna. But this experience of Krishna doesn't take the person close to Krishna. So a devotee doesn't try just for material successes and the feelings of victory over there. A devotee tries to serve Krishna wholeheartedly, and then the Krishna connection is there, those feelings will be constant and very sweet at that time. And devasayosmi. Now Prabhupada translated devasaya as enterprise or adventure. Many people practice participate in what is called as living on the edge sports. These are sports in which people put their life into threats, and somebody may go in an airplane and just jump down from the airplane. And then when they jump down, normally if somebody jumps from the airplane, people have parachute. But actually, they go with the parachute and they don't open the parachute only. And yes, when last moment appears as if just going to die, at that last moment suddenly the people open the parachute. So what happens is this: people want to risk and have adventure, take risk and have adventures, and in that sense of adventure they get a kick, and that kick is their sense of joy, and that makes them want to live. There was a person who used to just walk on railway tracks. And the railway would start coming, start running towards the railway, straight running, and the thrill that they would get was on seeing the driver's face. The driver thinking, I'm going to run over this person. He's jerking, move away. But he just runs straight towards the train, and the last moment, when the train would just crash, he would jump off the tracks. And he would, what is the fun in that, risking life? But he would just get some thrill in that. So one time he just came too close to the train and didn't know whether he would jump off. At last moment, he jumped off and he fell. And when he fell, what he fell on was, there was a Bhagavad Gita as it is over there. Then he read Bhagavad Gita as it is and he became a devotee. Well, sometimes Krishna can make our adventures also spiritually adventurous. So actually, if we want adventures in our spiritual life, if we try to share Krishna consciousness with others, then there are extraordinary adventures. And these are not just meaningless adventures, they are supremely meaningful adventures. Because through these adventures, we are helping others come close to Krishna. And we are granting them the highest happiness of all of existence. So, vyavasaya, yosmi, that vyavasaya, that excitement, that enterprise, all that. So people like adventure novels and adventure stories. Why? Because you know that experience is so special, and that experience is an experience of Krishna. And we can see that experience as a manifestation of Krishna. Sattvam sattvavatamaham. So among the strength, I am the strong, he says. Strength is also an opulence, and here Krishna is saying that opulence comes from me. So then, after this, Prishni naam vasudevosmi pandava naam dhananjaya muni naam apyaham vyasah kavi naam ushana kavihi. So Vrishni naam vasudevosmi. So the acharya explained that here he is referring to Vasudev doesn't refer to himself, it refers to Balramji. Vrishni naam vasudevosmi. Of course, both Krishna and Balram are Vasudev. They are sons of Vasudev through different wives, Devaki and Rohini. But here Krishna is talking about not about himself, about all opulences. And naturally he deferentially refers to his brother over here. He says, among the Vrishnis, the greatest is Balram. And that Balram is a manifestation of my opulence. Now, when here Pandavanam Dhananjaya, so at that time Krishna is thinking, oh, if Pandavas, he will surely refer to Yudhishthir. But he doesn't. He says, Pandavanam Yudhishthir, no, Pandavanam Dhananjaya. Why Dhananjaya? Because Dhananjaya was a special devotion. Yudhishthir was Dharmaraj, but Arjuna had not only extraordinary power of archery, but he had very special and intense devotion for Arjuna, for Krishna. So, Pandava naam Dhananjaya. Now, interestingly, over here this illustrates. So, now Krishna, Arjuna doesn't, on hearing this, say, oh, Krishna, I didn't know, we two are one. Then he has only for you to speak. Both of us are one, we are one, and we'll forget everything. I am also God, you are God. He didn't say that. He understands the principle over here. The principle is, he's talking about opulences. And then, Muninapyaham Vyasa, there are many munis, many sages, but among them Vyasa is the greatest. He wrote, he compiled together all the Vedic literature. Who can do that? And Kavina Mushina Kavihi. So Ushina refers to Shukracharya. Shukracharya is the priest of the asuras, of the demons. So that may consider to be a less than complimentary position. But actually, he's a priest. And even the asuras are powerful. And the asuras, they may not worship Lord Vishnu, but they also have faith in the power of Vedic rituals, to some extent at least. That's why they want to have priests who will do yajnas for them. So when they do yajnas like that, they need a priest, and they will not take any ordinary priest. They want a powerful priest. Shukracharya is a powerful priest. And we see Shukracharya, he also knows about Vishnu. Although because of his attachment, sometimes his position will be covered. His actions may not be devotional. But at the end of the Bali Maharaj pastime, Lord Vishnu has come as Vamana Dev, does not chastise Shukracharya. He says, actually, Shukracharya treats him as a respectable Brahman, and he asks him, what was that was wrong? That was in Bali Maharaj's sacrifice, because of which he got cursed and defeated and bound. So actually, what does Shukracharya say? He reveals profound spiritual knowledge about that. And he says that mantratas tantratas chidram, that whatever fault might be there in a sacrifice, but if one chants the holy names, all the faults can be countered. So the point is, Shukracharya is also an extraordinary priest, and that extraordinary power is a representation of Krishna. So we'll continue in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.